morning, honorable members. Let me welcome everybody. Apologies for starting late. We just had to make a delay, unavoidably, to address before we come here one of the issues that's on the agenda. We just couldn't be able to come without having addressed the chair, unfortunately. Today, we'll be getting an update by the Department of Energy on window 1, 2, and 3 of the first phase of the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producers Procurement Program in full. On Monday, the Minister on Energy, Minister Ben Dikobe-Martins, made an announcement which made us smile, obviously. And we knew that, in fact, we expected the announcement to have been made last week, and we also had timed the briefing or the presentation by the department to be done around this time. That is specifically referring to window 3. However, we felt it is appropriate that today we don't only handle window 3. We'll get more honorable members around window 3 because it's new. How many bidders went in, how many won, what's the value, a little bit of breakdown even on the various areas, biomass, biogas, landfill gas, wind, the two solars, photovoltaic and the others, but also to ensure that we have linkages or make linkages as to what has been the pattern from window 1 and 2 and 3. What has been the improvement in terms of local content, in terms of job creation, in terms of a couple of other things that they can share with us. And also draw a couple of lessons out of that, because this has been quite an achievement. We are the very committee honored members who was breathing on the department's neck to move at speed with this. If this were at this level, fine, we're talking about just capacity now. What capacity has been procured? We still have to see the generation, how is it going to roll out and things. But at least for now, some achievements have been done. Let's hear from them without wasting any time, because we've lost a lot of time in any case. Let me welcome them. So they are preparing themselves. Let me then pass to the committee secretary to give us any apologies.
Thank you, Chair. So the following apologies: Honourable Smaller, who has constituency commitments; Honourable Ferguson, who is attending the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs, where they deal with legislation; Honourable Salau, who is attending the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry; and then Honourable Van der Merwe, who is attending other parliamentary meetings; and then Honourable Greiling, who is not feeling well, Chair; and then also apologies from the Minister of Energy, who is currently in Malaysia, who is meeting with his counterpart; apologies from the Deputy Minister and the Director General, who is attending urgent meetings in Tshwane, Chair. Those are the apologies. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Rothe, well, Sir Peter Honourable Freyling is missing one of his patients. Well, that's how life it is. Vamube, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Can I take this opportunity to greet honourable members? I would be taking you through the presentation, and I'm with my colleague, Angelique. She would also assist me with the presentation. Before I go into the presentation, Chair, just to make a few remarks around Window 3. We did the announcement yesterday, but the actual appointment letters were sent on the 29th, means we did meet the timelines. However, our principals were not available to do the actual announcement, hence we had to do it yesterday. We sort of included the IRP on our presentation just to reflect where we are coming from and where we are to date. I'm colorblind, but I think it looks maroon, I think. If you look at the maroon side, that's the first determination that the minister made, which is about 3,725 megawatts. Out of the 3,725 megawatts, we split it into two. 3,625 megawatts was for large projects, and 100 megawatts was for small projects. I'm going to come back to the small project probably later. Then the other color, which is sort of blue, light blue kind of, it's the second determination. The second determination, it sort of deals with more than just renewables. On the renewable side, it provides for 3,200 megawatts, and then the rest is coal, imported hydro, gas, and the like. I just put this slide to give you a high-level overview where we are in terms of implementing the plan, meaning that whatever that we are not highlighted there, it's not something that we are procuring at this stage. It's something that we're still looking at going forward. However, I should mention the fact that the plan is currently under review. Some of the megawatt or some of the allocation might change probably slightly depending on what the outcome of the review entails. This chair is sort of just a repetition of what I've just said, the 3,725 megawatts. But what's important there is that out of that first determination, which is 3,725 megawatts, we have already signed contracts of about 2,400 megawatts. It means just over 2,400 megawatts we have already procured. And that will be your window 1 and window 2. And the preferred bidder stage, they were about 47 exactly, for window 1. My colleague will sort of give progress on what's happening on the actual ground in terms of those 47. I think I should say that the 47 is for window 1 and window 2, and window 1 project, they're already in construction. Actually, some of them, they are already connected into the grid. Some of the projects started connecting to the grid as early as September. Some they still going to be connecting in December. The timeline that we sort of put for Window 1 and Window 2 project is that they should start connecting as early as possible, but we sort of got the upper timeline, which is your 2016 for Window 2 and till 2017. I think we would appreciate that some of the technologies might take a little bit longer to build as compared to others, but also the connection, it's proven to be a challenge in terms of connecting some of these projects into the grid as soon as possible. You will understand that some of the bidders, they opted to build their own connection lines, and some they've opted to allow ESCOM to assist them with the building of the line, the connection lines. And the connection lines have got its own challenges that, I mean, probably I wouldn't be in a position to articulate all of them, but in areas where you find that it's a new line, you might even include, you know, environmental impact assessment issues, which could take a little bit longer. This is the second determination. We thought it's critical that we sort of also give you an overview of what's happening on the second determination. The 3,200 megawatt is what I've sort of alluded to earlier on, which is the renewable portion. But over and above the renewable portion, we also got about 2,500 megawatts for coal and imported hydro, 2,652 megawatts for gas-fired power plant. And we're also looking at medium-term risk mitigation, which is about 800 megawatts and 475 megawatts for gas or coal-based load power plant. With regards to this, we have already gone out to look for transitional advisors, and I'm pleased to say we got the advisors on board now, and we are sort of trying to put together the document, the procurement documents for the various technologies. Having said that, I think the gas style of things is it needs a little bit more of time, because what we have done, we opted to do a study first on the gas side, given the fact that we don't necessarily have gas in South Africa. We may have to look at LNG options and stuff like that. So we want to have a better understanding of what's happening and how best we could approach the gas sector, and have a sort of a holistic, you know, plan to gas, not just for power generation, but even for other use of gas within the country. Coming back to window one and window two, I think I've already mentioned that we had 47 for both window one and two, and we sort of just reflect on the timelines where we started with window one and two. But looking at window three in particular, we received 93 bids on the 19th of August, and the total megawatts for the 93 bids was about just over 6,000 megawatts. Yet what we're offering is 1,475 megawatts. You can see that we sort of had so much interest on this window. And I think I should say that also the prices that were offered were very attractive. This is just to recap how we deal with the project. We got the request for proposal, which is divided into different parts. Part A being the general requirements and rules, and Part B being the qualification criteria, Part B being the economic development criteria. I think it's important that I sort of flag on this, because it's going to have an impact as I talk to the outcome. Well, Part A is where we talk about how many megawatts we want to procure in a particular window and what are the requirements and rules of the program. Part B, it deals with qualification. We had an exemption from the triple PFA with regards to the scoring. Probably I will talk to this in more details as we proceed. But what is happening is that when you run a procurement program, normally you use what they call it 90-10 approach, meaning that 90% should be the price and then 30% should be whatever other element that you might want to put in there, including economic development. Now, we changed the approach slightly to accommodate the economic development activities, which we thought is more critical for this program. What we do in Part A, we put thresholds, which means we sort of flag the minimum requirement on economic development, let alone the fact that we evaluate economic development based on points, but we also put minimum requirement, say, for socio-economic development, you must at least have, for instance, 1.5, you know, 10% contribution towards that portion of your submission. So if you don't have that, you automatically get disqualified under this program. I'm just making that one as an example. So there are a number of thresholds that we've put under Part B, which we look at before we can even look at the price, which means you need to comply with all of those. And then your Part C, that's where we start saying, if you comply with everything on Part B, therefore now let's look at your price, and let's also look at your economic development offerings, and we allocate points now based on what you are committing to do. That's where the comparative evaluation takes place. So you will find that some people, they fail on Part B before they can even get into the comparative evaluation. I think that's the point that I wanted to drive here. We also got power purchase agreement. I think core members are familiar with this. Got power purchase agreement for each and every technology. These are agreements that are signed between ESCOM and the seller, which is the IPP. Then we got the implementation agreement, which is our agreement as the department or as government, which we sort of look into the IPP to honor certain commitments that they would have made during the bid submission. And we also give the IPP some comfort, you know, in terms of first form in case they don't honor some of their commitments. Sort of, this is a diagram that sort of show you all the different agreements that we have in place to implement the program. Among other things, I think I've dealt with Part B, you know, into details on the previous slides, but just to flag other things that we sort of do consider under Part B, which is your environmental issues and land issues, economic development issues, finance, technical, pricing, and capacity. Meaning, when I'm saying pricing, in some of the technologies we do have caps. But on wind and PV, we did remove the caps for window 3 because without the competition, it's good enough. It will take care of the prices. But on other technologies where we didn't anticipate that much competition, we left the prices. We didn't remove them. So it becomes a qualification criteria in Part B. If you bid above the price that we have put the cap, we disqualify you in Part B before you can even go to Part C. Looking at the evaluation itself, we conducted the evaluation under closed environment and under strict security conditions. And we dealt with the evaluation in different ways, and we ring-fenced teams. The financial team was evaluating separately from the legal team, technical as well. We sort of dealt with the evaluation in separate rooms, so to say. And we required each and everyone who does the evaluation to declare whether it's a firm that they have been involved in any or assisting any of the bidders. And if a firm has been involved in assisting any of the bidders, but the person that is evaluating, we don't expect that person to have been involved in any or in any way with any bids. So the people that are working for us, they are sort of ring-fenced. They advise us only as government. They can't advise the bidders. Actually, on our RFP, we list the name of everybody who helps us, you know, who advise government on this program. And we require or the bidders as well to tell us well in advance before they even submit the bids who's advising them so that we can have a look whether we don't have any people advising on both sides. And we also make it the obligation or a responsibility of the bidder to inform us in case they are aware of a person who's advising government and also playing on the other side. And if they are not telling us that information and we find it or we discover that there's somebody who does something like that, the bidder can be disqualified. We also had independent review teams These are teams that are not necessarily evaluating the bids, but they are sitting there reviewing the work that is done by the evaluators. We also got the independent governance review team. The governance review teams, they are looking at the process that we are following and make sure that it's proper, we follow our rules, we follow our policies, we don't cut any corners as we do the evaluation. Let's talk about the preferred bidders. What happened, we had six solar voltaic preferred bidders under window 3, which constituted about 435 megawatts. Yet the allocation that we had for window 3, it was 401. You will notice that we exceeded the allocation slightly. The reason for that is that we had a bidder that was sort of in between. If you remove the bidder, you still left with some megawatt. If you put the bidder, then you get outside of the cap. Then we decided, because the RFP does allow us to do so, then we decided to add, we call it the straddler, to add it into the list of the preferred bidders. The same applies to the wind technology. We had six, and then when we add the straddler, you get about seven preferred bidders. Concentrated solar, we had two, which takes about 200 megawatts, and small hydro, we didn't get any preferred bidder there, but we had projects. I just mentioned that we had about two projects which they couldn't qualify under Part B. Landfill gas, one project was preferred, and biomass, one project was preferred as well, which makes the total megawatt, under window 2, which has been allocated to these preferred bidders, to be 1,456, and with 17 preferred bidders. Just to look at the prices, what we have under window 3, you will realize that it gives you sort of a comparison between window 1, where we were in window 1, and where we are in window 2. In window 1, on average, we're sitting at about 2.75 per kilowatt, and in window 2, we're sitting at around 1.64 per kilowatt hour, and on window 3, we're sitting at 88 cents per kilowatt hour, which is a sharp decline if you look at from where we come from and to where we are now. I must say we are very proud of these achievements. We believe that these are good prices in the PV space. We sort of try and use the pricing and base it on certain base date. If you look at the first column on that slide, it gives you April 2011 base date, and then the lower, column, it gives you April 2018 base date, which means you adjust that to inflation and also the rent, then you get the prices there. And we also sort of give comparison in terms of the megawatt allocated for PV on all the different windows. You will see that on window 1, probably that's where we allocated the most megawatt, and then it sort of dropped slightly on window 2 and 3. And we also show you the project cost. If you look at window 1, we had about 23 billion, 12 billion in window 2, and 8 billion in window 3. The same applies with wind. If you look at the prices, the first row, we started from 1.14 per kilowatt hour all the way to 65 cents per kilowatt hour in window 3. I think that's the 2011 base date. And we think this is the best price you could probably get in the wind space. And we can see that if we adjust it with probably April 2013, you know, base date, it gives you about 73 cents per kilowatt hour. It's important that we do this adjustment because it makes it easy to compare. Because when you compare it with window 2, you need to adjust it with the right inflation so that it gives you the right price. Otherwise, you would get something that you not, that is incomparable. And also the cost, you will see that window 3, we're sitting at 16.9 billion. And then on window 2, we're at about 10.8 or 0.9 billion, and then 13.3 billion for window 1. This is the total project cost. And the same applies with a CSP. However, I should say that under the CSP, what we have done, we created a peaking tariff because we are of the view that CSP can assist you to a certain extent during the peak time because you can store power and generate more power during the peaking time. Now, we then said you can beat your tariff, your base tariff, and then whatever base tariff that you've beaten, we would then multiply that by 270% to get your peaking price to give people incentives to generate power during the peak time. Hence, it's a bit difficult to compare it with window 2 and 3 because that doesn't necessarily give you the right, you know, price so to compare with. So the 146 cent is the base price. Therefore, it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you are getting 146 cent throughout. So there are certain times of the day or during the peaking time where you get probably almost three times that for the fact that we're generating during peak time. So the tariffs are not necessarily comparable. But if you look at window 1, you will see that there's a decline, you know, on average from where we were, which was 268 cents, which on window 2 were 250. And window 3 is the one that you cannot easily compare, but we believe that it gives us more value because it helps us to generate power during peak, which we all know that is a bit of a challenge at this point. And the cost, if you look at window 1, we had about 11 billion rand. And window 2, we had 4 billion rand on CSP. The reason why it's 4 billion there is because the amount of megawatts that were available on window 2 was only 50 megawatts. So it's slightly lower. And on window 3, we were 17 billion, which is higher because in that event, we were 200 megawatts allocated for that, to that window. With regards to landfill gas, this is the first time we get landfill gas, hence we cannot compare it with the previous windows. However, it's safe to say we got about, you know, 8% for landfill gas project, the one that we got. And you can then look at the total project cost, which is about 288 million rand for that particular plant. And then with regards to biomass, we didn't have biomass as well on these windows. And on this window, we had a project. And the price is about 124 cents. And the investment is about a billion rand on biomass. just to look at the spread per province, how do we do? I suppose most investment is going towards the Northern Cape, I suppose because, I mean, the sun is very good there. And you will see that as well, that the other provinces, they're not getting much, but the Eastern Cape probably compares better compared to the other provinces in terms of investment, and followed by Free State and then the rest. In Mpumalanga, we had a project there, which was one project and didn't go through. And what we are thinking of is that it's important that we probably, you know, encourage even in some areas where these projects are, or in some areas where we could probably love to have more projects going forward, especially in these provinces where we seem to be having limited, you know, participation. But we would like to believe that certain provinces have got certain resources that we could probably capitalize on. For instance, if you look at KZN, they've got a lot of biomass. For KZN and Mpumalanga, there's a lot of biomass, or there's a lot of cogeneration activities that could, you know, take place. And we believe that once we start launching the cogeneration project, these provinces will benefit much more compared to the other provinces in that particular technology. So it's not like the other provinces will not benefit at all. It depends on what kind of technology we are pushing at a particular point, which would then incentivize people to participate in those provinces, given the availability of resources. And we then split at the cost, or the project cost per province, to just give you a high-level overview of how investment looks like in the different provinces. And you will see that, I suppose, the investment would follow, you know, the projects. Where you've got more projects, you will see more money going into those provinces for investment. The Northern Cape is sitting at about 35 billion rand. I think it's very high. And then, yeah, then it sort of follows the same logic, I suppose, per province, per project. And we then try to track the local content as well, you know, how much is being invested where in terms of the local content. You will see that it's about, the total investment on local content is about 15 billion rand. If you were to calculate it from 33 billion rand total project value. The reason why you got that differentiation between the project value and the project cost is because there are certain costs that are not regarded as project cost or project value. Meaning that, for instance, if you look at, let me make an example. I mean, for instance, grid connection costs are not part of the project cost. So as a result, you don't calculate your local content on that. There are a number of reasons why we decided to do it like that. It's because, for instance, most of the grid work is done by Eskom. The bidder pays Eskom to do the work. And Eskom at this point, they find it difficult to give that local content. So account for the local content, because for the bidder to claim the local content, they need to prove it. So now they need to go to Eskom and say, give us proof that you spend the money on local content, for them to come and go to Angelique and say, okay, here is the proof. So we decided to discount that and say, grid connection, it's not going to be part of your project cost, for those reasons. And we also try to separate between foreign portion of the investment and local portion of the investment. But I think it's important that we explain that we, most of the projects are funded in rand because we don't take the risk of foreign currency. Okay. So you will find that most of the banks that are playing in this space is our local banks. It's not international banks. You could have few of those playing, but by and large, it's your Standard Bank, it's your FNB, RNB, and the likes. So that's why you, when you look at your foreign portion, it's sort of, it's not 100% foreign, maybe. It may use that with those ways. However, whatever foreign portion that the bidder or the seller might have put in, they need to hedge that. We want to buy the power in rand. We don't want to buy it in dollars or in euros. Just to give you a view of the local or economic development on photovoltaic, we sort of split it in terms of windows as well, and in terms of the local content. You will see that the local content is improving from one window to another. On window one, we're sitting at about 38%, and on window three, we're at 53.4%. We're at 53.4%. On window three, we're at 53.8%. Local content. And I think I should say that as we move along, I mean, we keep on adjusting, you know, some of the requirement in relation to local content, and we keep on improving the manner in which people account for local content. And I think the 53.8 for us, I think it's a great achievement in terms of local content. We also talk about jobs. We require bidders to tell us how many people they want to employ. And you can see that from window one, it was about, you know, 2,300 people during construction. And on window two, we sort of improved. Okay, we didn't necessarily improve on window two. But I think it's important that you take it in context of the megawatts as well allocated to those technologies, not just the jobs, without looking at how many megawatts is allocated. And also during operation, we sort of flagged the number there. I think if you look at window one, we had about 6,000 during operation, and then it slightly dropped to 3,000 on window two, and then it increased again to about 7,000, or just over 7,000 in window three. And on wind, it sort of follows more or less a similar pattern. On window one, we had about 2,500, and window two is about 2.2, and then on window three, we had about, you know, 8.5. I think window three, it sort of shows the level of competition we had and the offering that people were making based on the fact that the competition was tight. That's why you see more jobs coming on that window. On concentrated solar, it sort of, you can have a look at the jobs that we created. But I think it's important to note that the megawatts as well allocated to CST, they differ from one window to another. For instance, on window one, it was 1,500, hence you got about 1.3 jobs. And on window two, it was only 50. Actually, I think that plant did well because you got about 1.1. Yet the megawatts allocated was small. Then on window three, we had a 200, which the jobs is about 1.7. And then on landfill gas, we can't compare it with one and two because we didn't have any projects, but it sort of gives you the high level overview of the jobs to be created under that plant, construction 6 and 240 during operation. I think it's important that I sort of qualify the way in which we calculate jobs. What we normally say is that a job is one person employed at least for 1 year. We count it as a job. And then on biomass, the same applies. During construction, we had about 96, and operation is about 240. In summary, we just give you the analysis of the megawatts and for the different windows. On window 3, it's about 1,456 megawatts. And we still got a remaining of 2,808 megawatts to be procured in the subsequent windows. And this is sort of the spread of the Windows 3 project. At this point, I think I would like to give it to my colleagues to... take you through the progress made on Window 1 project, and we will then take the question through you, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because Maduna and them does all the paperwork, and they sit in my office and prepare all these wonderful contracts, and then I have to go out to site and climb towers, and so it gets very interesting.
I thought you were going to bring your boots to this place. You really do that.
So it was very close. But they wouldn't allow me on the airplane with my hat. I'm just going to fly through most of these you've seen already. The Bid Window 1 approved project. So this just shows you your project name, the province where they're located, and obviously the technology and how much was allocated to them in their capacity for technology. So this is my Bid Window 1 approved projects. There's two lists of them. Now, so far on Bid Window 1, most of them started in November, December last year with construction already. So at today, or actually at the end of September, so most of about the 15th of October was the last statistic analysis we did, was about 22 billion rand that's already been spent during Bid Window 1. We've created about 12,000 jobs, and we've created for the youth about 6,000 jobs. Now, the only thing that you should not get confused is that 12,000 jobs includes that 6,000. So we count the jobs created for the whole project, but we also calculate how many of those are youth. That means that they're younger than 35. The commence or the COD for most of these projects, once again, it just gives you the IPP IDs and the dates that they are planning to actually go into operation. The next slide, there is a slide, I think, that shows you all the, how can I say, the factors, the obligations that the IPPs need to actually adhere to. These are the obligations and the promises that they made in the IA, so the implementation agreement with the department. These are all the various things that the department measures them against on a quarterly basis during construction phase as well as during operational phase. There are 7 factors, of which 5 of them fall in construction phase, and then the full 7 fall in operational phase. So during construction, we only measure them on black citizenship, skilled black citizens, local community jobs created, the value of local content spent, blacktop management, procurement spent, and then women-owned vendors. These are just, or this is just a breakdown as it is per IPP. So, and this is once again at the 15th of October, the last statistical analysis. What I'm showing you now is a few pictures from construction, mainly because I think it's very difficult unless you've been to site. Let me put it this way. All the IPPs are on time. None of the projects are behind schedule. Currently we are 37% progress on all construction. So that's like a figure overall for the whole Bid Window 1. The guys are fairly, all of the civils are done, all the electrics are done. It's mostly now, and the construction is mostly the tiles or panels that still need to go up. Some of the IPPs have already put half of their plant into onto the grid. Lots of the guys are really busy with commissioning and energization. So this, for instance, if you look at the first photo there with the three little dots, it just shows you all the technical tests that it goes through and the various engineers that walk past and make sure that the torquing is correct and that the pillars are correct and the cement is the right density, etc., etc. This is at the Lesedi power plant in Cosmosburg. You can see their panels, and then at the back of the panels you can see where the trenches are being or were being dug for the inverter cables to lie down. This next one is for Silas. A nice little Suzlon tower on its way. Now, it's amazing to see what the guys must go through. Every single time I go to a wind farm, to see how big those towers are, the transformers, etc., and how they need to come by road, the abnormal tracks, the police that needs to be arranged. It's really interesting to see how the logistics all came together and how integral part this is of the whole process. So this is one of the towers on its way to Cookhouse. This is Metro Wind. They in Jeffreys Bay or Blue Water Bay, actually, just off the side there. There at the bottom you can see now Jeffreys or Metro Wind has actually got one of the biggest cranes in the world that helps it to assemble its towers and its blades. And as you can see, the top picture shows you all 9 towers are now up. So they are also busy with commissioning at the moment. The bottom picture shows you Tozer Field. And as you can see, the top picture, they're also half of their plant is ready to actually go onto the grid. And as you can see, they're testing their tracker system. As you can see, some of those panels are up and down, so like various ways of tracking the sun. And the bottom is just a picture of the whole run side that's already been developed. Now, if you go to bid window 2, the contracts were signed in May, so most of these guys only started with construction and civil works, etc., in June. These are the 19 projects that were approved, once again with all of their technologies, the capacity, etc., and which province they fall in. Here we show you the commencement dates for bid window 2. Out of the 19 sites, 5 have commenced construction in the first half of 2013, so that will be June, just after they were appointed. So May, June, they're already starting with the civils and clearing the grounds. 5 will commence construction in the second half, so they started July, August. 2 will commence construction in the first half of 2014. 2 will commence construction in the second half of 2014. And then 1 will commence construction in 2015. Now, you must also remember, when they sign the PPA with Eskom, these IPPs have to adhere to the grid and what's available. So most of these have to sign, they get a notice to proceed from Eskom. So although it looks like some of them aren't doing anything until 2015, it's purely because of the notice to proceed that they need to obtain before they can go ahead. Currently, what they've spent so far in their first report to us, they've spent about $2 billion on construction, the ones that are currently busy, so it's about 10 of them. 981 jobs were created, of which 389 of those were for youth. The same, there's just a statistic analysis of the people that have already started construction, how they've spent local content, procurement spend, and black women-owned vendors. And that is my update on bid window 1 and 2. There's not a lot happening with 2 at the moment because of the, they've only just started. So we'll start our site visits probably in January, February when it comes to bid window 2. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Bumobeni and Mama Angelique. I thought to also to indicate that according to certain recent reports, that this has placed South Africa in the top 10 globally. Already in the G20 group, we were from number 20 and went up to number 9 within a year. And those are issues that are worth, mentioning and commending. Obviously, this is an advance towards clean energy that we need to take note of as well, honorable members. The increasing interest which comes through oversubscription is that also a point to note, even at the in window 3, if you look at the amount of power that was bidded for, far beyond to the power that was allocated by the department. And if I remember well, midway in window 2, the former minister had to start putting an additional determination of another 2,800 megawatts. I may not be accurate with the figure, but already there was a very strong signal that by the time we finish window 3, honorable members, it's clear that there will be room for another take, and I'm sure we'll be looking with interest now as to once we the minister at least is settled with the first determination, how do we proceed to that one. And I trust and hope our energy stakeholders meetings, which are held at the famous venue E249, have made an impact as well. I'm looking at also the increasing confidence, which is obviously through what I see as improved local capacity, may have also been buttressed by financing. If you remember, members, one of the energy stakeholders meeting, the lots of them, was around financing when signals were coming out from the bidders that they were getting uneasy about the banks now beginning to ask for an additional piece of shifting goalposts and all of that. And I trust and hope this has made an impact. Well, as I was listening to the presentation by the department, I found that there is an improvement in the ability of the local capacity. I'm very sensitive to that, just as a person, which also reflects an improved confidence to even an increased uptake in future. With that trust and hope, there will be more interaction with your SANEDs and others, CSIR, to ensure that the technology is also localized as well, because let's be open, as for now, technology is 100% imported. Price decrease, a good cause to celebrate, but let's also see how that works out when we do the actual power generation down the line. And I thought we were going to at least share with us, who has already generated, even if it's a few kilowatts into the grid. I know there was, to Dr. Barnard, there was one company which he made mention, which actually had, was going to start commissioning within this month, 2 months ahead. Obviously, you've already indicated that all projects are on time, and it's an issue worth commending, because, some of these projects, particularly ones, they run into billions. We start getting cringing, we start getting uneasy, will they make time, will they be done in time, because if projects run beyond target time, there are cost implications, unfortunately. But I trust and hope from what we have been briefed, that's a cause to celebrate, to ensure that the efficiency, even at installation or construction level, becomes a strong practice. Enter waste to energy and biomass at long last. I remember last time, probably it was at window 2 level, we were beginning to check why is there no uptake on this. That's very helpful, and I trust and hope practitioners in the biogas sector will be doing something pretty soon. As a curious testing, one of members, I picked up the biogas association, which was getting formalized around September. I suppose then they'll be preparing themselves, you know, to make an uptake in future. But those are areas which also have got to be, you know, encouraged as much as possible. If you remember, there was one expert from the University of UNISA who said, as long as we generate waste, which means there is a big opportunity to generate energy out of that waste, and pointing particularly at municipalities to ensure that they take that up. I'm not just saying landfill gas, I'm just looking at waste as a whole, you know. Job creation of 8,000 jobs is a good start. Let's see how that turns out in future, and I trust and hope that job creation is not just job creation. It's tied to as much as possible to some skills development, no matter how much minimal. It should be helpful, because even if those jobs are of a limited period, at the end of the day, if you put those beneficiaries in a better stand, that's even a monopoly contribution to their welfare. One of the members, I'm sure, the distribution, shall I call it distribution per province, is something that the department will look into. I had to speak about some, making reference to technology as well, you know. Pumalanga, Ungane may not have anything, but I'm sure there's waste in Pumalanga, there's biomass. There could be a couple of those things. They may not have high levels of irradiation, like Northern Cape, of course, this is a debut in this regard, but also there is a good cause to encourage that each and every province, you know, takes up a portion. Of course, it's private sector that does this, but once again, Pungane, I'm sure it means through your good skills, you have to check the local private sector in Mpumalanga, you know, as to whether the deterrent is around which is the best technology for there, or just not keen to invest in this area, or there are just no takers. But it's an issue that just needs to be explored quite favorably. But Wamuveni, thanks very much on the whole. After months and months of pressure, we are at some steps. I'm quite conscious, all of members, we are just talking of, you know, installed capacity at this stage in time, but the point is that the ducks are in a row. Progress is quite in line with the plans, and definitely, you know, from time to time, I trust and hope the department will also update us as to which other projects are beginning to generate power into the grid. That will be very keen on, you know, without even coming to the committee. Having said that, honourable members, any questions, any clarity seeking, or even comments for that matter, there it is in front of you, window 1, 2, and 3.
please. Honorable Khadim.
Well, thanks, Chair. This is a lovely presentation. At least it gives us a light where I'm going in relation to the opening of these windows. how I wish that other members were here, and also the other stakeholders who were raising complaints in the other stakeholders meeting, that you know, there's not much that is being put as attention towards enlarging the scale of solar, wind, and biomass, and other avenue of this energy. How I wish, Chair, that this information can be also, you know, be available to all some of those stakeholders that were there, that were complaining in that meeting. It really gives me an encouragement to say, as we told them, that, but there's something that is happening, although some of them denied, blindly so, you know, also claiming that they are professors, they're quoting big books from America. They forgot to look at their own website that they can be able to get information. Probably in the next stakeholders meeting, Chair, we can have such kind of information and being supplied to these people, because for me it tells that some of them, they are likely ignorant in ensuring that they get information. Chair, getting to the presentation is that I just want to get a clarity in terms of the Windows 2. You spoke about the project that's going to open 2015. How big is that project? Has it already started, you know, operating? Have they started construction? What is happening, or when do they start construction? So at least one will also follow suit. I was just looking, counting months, when have they started? And I was looking around the space of 5 months. Some of them, they are ready for commissioning. This shows a very tremendous progress. But also I've got an interest in knowing some of these companies in terms of their status quo, because I'll want to, I've got an interest in seeing whether these projects also, what value have they instilled in terms of skilling young people, and in ensuring that there's sustainability or there's continuity in terms of the, you know, knowledge. But also in terms of the balance there of the gender equity, it really, you know, flags as an eyesight for me to say whether are they men only, or there are other women that are also participating within those projects. Because if there is little women that's going to participate, there's going to be a problem. And if there are little women that are participating there, you must be careful for a shambok from Mam Tinto here. And Mama Tivela, when it comes to women empowerment, they are very passionate. when you were speaking in terms of the procurement procedures, I'm trying to get to understand as you're speaking in terms of the 90-10% requirement that is at the rule of Part A. I'm trying to check whether, what other processes, because I understand when you say there's Part A, there's Part B, and most of the companies fail when it comes to Part B. But you haven't told me what else do you do in order to assist them. Do you give them a second chance, or what is happening exactly? Or you just say you failed, go back, you see yourself, how do you come again in the next window? Or what is happening? And I'm trying also, you know, eager to understand whether part of these people that are failing are Are there any historical disadvantaged companies that also fail in terms of getting enough capacity in terms of, you know, reaching that line of understanding? Because I have assumption that if they are companies, that simply means there will be no development on South African content or South African companies for that matter. Because we expect that although, you know, some of the other stakeholders in the stakeholder meeting, they were saying, you find that the space becomes too small to participate. It's for few individuals. Mm-hmm. When they try to come and participate, they're being closed out by these regulations that are being put in. Mm-hmm. But nobody also assists them or teach them or capacitate them in terms of ensuring that at least in the near future they come and partake in this field. The other question relates to, as you were mentioning, that you also give them some sort of realization, some sort of comfort in ensuring that at least they've got this, the understanding between yourself and the IPPs, the department and the IPPs. What kind of comfort are you talking about that you give as a luxury for them to participate? Maybe the other question the chairperson has just mentioned, I was going to ask, well, you know, I wouldn't leave it out, that my province is out here. I must be patriotic to my citizens who deployed me in Parliament.
I knew.
But surely I understand probably that this was a little bit of a start. But I've mentioned before that I've got a really serious outcry to say, you're going to other provinces, even where the sun is not there. But where the sun rises, there's none of these projects that have been established. It really worries me. I'm sure this is the fourth time that I'm saying this. Twice I said with the previous minister, and twice I've said with the DG sitting in the table. Now I'm saying it to you once again. It really worries me that I understand there might be no wind that side. But there is sun. You go to Mpumalanga, you go to Limpopo, there is sun. Every day. That one you cannot doubt. I really have a worry about such. Obviously the issue of biomass must be, I'll also go and do my constituency work and go and search for companies and bring them here. Why can't these companies be assisted? Because they say they're doing biomass. Because I've got an understanding that there are companies who are dealing with biomass, but I don't know whether they don't have any information around the issue, this issue, even engaging with the department. Last one, Chair. As you're saying, some of the evaluation protocols that you're engaging with, that becomes policy in ensuring that there are not bad hands that are getting in. There is what we call middleman. Do you know a middleman? An advisor of an advisor. I'm trying to check, how do you prevent such? How do you also check to see that, no. Here there was also information leaking in terms of the information. Because the advisor of an advisor leaking information to another person, this person leaked to another one, this one leaked to another one. The right information ended up to the wrong hands. How do you ensure that whether the people that are also partaking there, they sign a certain, you know, agreement in terms of keeping confidentiality and in ensuring that the issue of conflict of interest is adhered to by all means. Thank you, Chair.
Mematuela, Matindo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to compliment the department because really now we understand where we're going to. And what I'm really encouraged about the job creation, because this really will help us with the people who always complain there are no jobs. But and they will tell you how many people are not working and so forth, and having their own statistics which you don't know where they're getting it from, and spreading it all over, making people angry. Today we see fires burning all over, and without understanding, because those people don't know what's happening. And what they hear over the media, they think it's true. And they always want to condemn the government. I'm happy to hear about women and young people working. But the only thing that I did not hear is if you have any people living with disabilities in their jobs. And with the manufacturers, do we have local manufacturers? Because every time is we get important things. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, on Mr. Khadiwe said an awful and all the questions that I wanted to ask, but on the question of the previous advantage people, are you making sure that the banks are assisting those people, because most of them don't have resources, financial resources, and in your business, do you make sure that also those people are assisted, and what is your criteria in choosing the bidders? Also, you know, there's this thing that the youth must be looked after in this country, in our country. But I'm telling you, we women of middle age, we need to be looked after as well, because we are making sure that our homes are home, are warm. And the youth, you see them in the streets every day. Jobs are created for them, but they don't. They've got a choice. They don't want any job. They want jobs that are going to give them what they want. But we make sure that our homes and our children go to school and get the skills that we need for this country. So the women must also be looked after. Thanks.
Just a short one for me. Chair, I think first I think we should appreciate these evaluation protocols, because many times when there are bidders, there's a comeback which usually delays everything. Let's hope these are watertight, things are going smoothly. If I take it to your slide 12, just I see that for your small hydro and biogas, there were no takers. Can you again say more about that? Is that something, because there are no people out there, is it left out, or I'm hoping we're going to get it later? Thank you.
My turn. I had a question here, but since you did respond to it, the number of agreements in each window, the number of bidders, but unless you can't help now, because also it's going to be just interesting, just to remind us, even in future, there were applicant bidders and then there were successful bidders. If you can't remember it now, it doesn't matter. But it's also for the benefit of members to just have a sense of the patents, because I know, I mean, even the first investors conference, there were about 800, 900 people from about 500, 600 companies. I mean, everybody was jittery. Nobody was clear that there will be interest, but all of a sudden there was that. So I'm asking this question because we need to monitor the patent, all of us. We need to monitor the patent, whether it's going down, even splitting it up to each technology, you know, not just the overall global figure, you know, and the values, obviously. If you don't have the staff now, you don't have to reply, you know, to that for now, but it's about monitoring it. It's all ours, including media, but it's, you know, also the stakeholders, as I can see, Sawia, Sarek, and others are around. Thanks for that. Now, having heard, I know this committee has done a couple of things, you know, around the landfill or waste-to-energy approaches, but of course, quite late. But can you share with us why are they still low? Because that's one area that has a lot of benefit in various ways. I mean, if you remove landfill gas sites, honorable members, you know, not only are you generating, you know, energy on the site, but there's an environmental benefit on the other, you know. Also, I'm provocative on this because remember when we went to the one at Tegwin, what do you call it, Marianne Hill, they took a very long time to get that you know, of it is because we still have not been able to overcome the delays in that field, you know, that sort of thing. Also, on the local content, it's around 40% on both landfill and biomass. I'm not questioning that with the suspicion, just out of real sheer interest, you know. Shouldn't it have been 20% or shouldn't it have been 60%, you know, if you're able to respond, why start at that level? And of course, just compare it to the others, the other technologies start at this level. I have to be selfish on other area. Honourable members, because there is subsidization that takes place here, one way or another. And I'm interested to see what are the implications of the price decrease on overall subsidization. Just in time for us to take a break, give the two team members of Team Energy to prepare their responses. Honourable members, can you take a break? Hot tea and coffee have just come in. Thanks very much.
Project plans normally work between 12 months to 18 months for a site to be completed. The person that is actually only commencing in 2015 is actually really just commencing in 2015. That will be the first time you'll actually break ground, put around fences, etc., etc., because he needs that notice to proceed as per his contract. He might just be falling in an area where there is grid connection issues or where a transformer is still on order or where Eskom, etc., etc. So that is purely contractual and he needs to adhere to those contract issues. When it comes to some of the IPPs that are ready to go onto the grid, the guys have been testing, for instance, if you look at Rathmo. In Rustenburg, they've been connected to the Eskom grid for about 33 weeks now. They've tested. They are a 7 megawatt farm, and they actually did a 7.3 onto the grid. They're not getting money for it yet because they've not actually, there's certain dates that need to be adhered to as well. The same with going into early operations. You cannot go into early operation more than 180 days into your contract. So although some of the farms are going much faster than they anticipated, and they're way ahead of their schedule, there's 180 days barrier that they need to be aware of. So, for instance, the people that are 2 months ahead, Toast Review, they are only going into operation with half of their plant. So, for instance, if there's 7,000 panels, they're going with 3,500 in the grid. Most of this they do purely so that they can start generating money so long from Eskom. But that's not a whole farm that's connected. So according to me, the project is not yet complete. And I do not measure it as such. I measure them once they are fully connected to the grid and, you know, their whole plant is operational. The ones that are definitely going onto the grid now is Kalkspoort on the 12th and Rasmo on the 15th of November. Kalkspoort. So those are the two, but I will send you all the details so that you are aware of that. I know Dr. Barnard spoke about the Kalkspoort inauguration on the 12th of November as well. So those explaining the date and going onto the grid. Skills development and the youth and training, etc. Part of my responsibility as the monitoring and evaluation of the IDPs is to ensure that they actually, because it's easy to put the figures there and say, okay, well, yes, I've got so many people on board and I've done this. Part of the obligations is the ED plan, so that they've got social economic plans, they've got an enterprise development plan. All of those we have to monitor over the next 20 years. And part of that ED plan that they have committed to has got to do a lot about uplifting their community, skills development, etc., etc. Not only that, but we've seen while visiting the site, there's lots of the IPPs, for instance, that lie together in the same area. Now, only one community or two communities benefit from there, where the community that just lies outside the 50-kilometer radius does actually not benefit. So what we're doing as national government, we're trying to sit together with provincial and local government, identifying the needs that there are in the communities in that area and actually helping getting the RTP to either adjust their ED plans or help a little bit out on that side of things. With regard to the skills, lots of the RTPs they've gone to the colleges that's closest to them in their area. And there's lots of collaboration happening with some of the colleges that they're actually asking or sending some of the people to train on PV and on wind, etc. And the skills development and higher education has also been involved with the PICC, so all the SIPs that have developed a whole skills development plan has been developed. So IDC is responsible with a coordinator to ensure that skills development plan, and they are in contact with the IPPs to see whether they can assist that you actually can send the people to school or have training sites on or training on site for the people. When it comes to gender, I would like to say there is quite a few where the ladies are definitely part of it. For instance, in Katu, all the bolts where you saw the structure that the panels are resting on, the ladies are all responsible. They work in teams. It was actually amazing to see how they walk around and they're singing between the panels, and they actually tighten the bolts before the engineers come to talk it. So the women are very much involved, but there is something I need to lift up. Black-owned vendors, we can't find them. So if there's something that we can do, we've advertised, I've got the suppliers of IPP sending out Facebook messages and SMSs in bulk. Any black-owned women vendors, we are really battling to find those. So lots of guys, in certain areas you've got them, and in certain areas there is absolutely nothing. So that's something we really need to look at as government and, you know, communities to see how we can actually lift those up. Job creation with regards to disabilities, it's not something we've asked the IPPs to measure, purely because it's a construction site, and it's very difficult, especially for any, if there's limb issues in the sense of arms and legs and wheelchairs. What I have seen, though, is that some of the ladies, for instance, I was at a venue a little while ago where they actually had a blind lady that was cooking in the kitchen. So she was making their lunches for them. Because that's, I mean, she's used to it, that's what she's done all her life. So she's totally au fait around the kitchen. So they do, there's very few and far between, but it's not something we've asked them to measure. I can, however, for instance, find out if there's any others I do not know about. Yes. Yes. In the kitchen. She's totally blind, but I mean, she's been blind since birth. I mean, us women can do anything, don't you know by now? Just give us something. The technology, as Chair asked, we will give you a list of those. I do not can't necessarily remember, and I'll now actually, before I hand over to him, we talked about the security and issues and stuff. I must be honest, the security at the IPP office are very strict. For instance, that information I don't have access to, purely because we are split so entirely in between what's strategically and what's the operational side of the monitoring, that there's certain information they have and I can't have access to it. It doesn't even leak anywhere. So it's definitely, the security is something that I must be honest, they are very good at. Virginia, over to you.
Thanks, Angelique. Through you, Chair. Just to take some of the questions, with regards to historically disadvantaged companies and how do we assist them, what we have done on the large program is that we insist that each developer that comes in must have 40% South African, and they must also have a level 4B status. It means it's a requirement. If you don't have that, you don't qualify. The idea was that if we do that, we sort of try and develop, you know, the skills in South Africa. We also try and have South Africans that in future could be on their own and build a project independently. They shouldn't rely all the time from international companies. But having said that, we also got the small project. I'm going to come back to this point later on. We also got the small project. The small project is between 1 and 5 megawatts. The intention there is that if you look at it, we have structured it completely differently. It's not the same as the big project. We give people an opportunity to submit what we call a pre-qualification kind of. We look at what they've submitted, whether it meets the requirement or it doesn't meet the requirement. You don't have to pay a guarantee or anything. Then we send it back. We say, okay, you need to improve there and there and there and there, and then they can come back again on the next window without having to spend a lot of money. Because I think people, they are concerned about the fact that they spend a lot of money on this project, preparing the document, they put a bid guarantee, which is, you know, very expensive and stuff like that. So we thought the small project could be a starting point where, you know, locally, you know, disadvantaged kind of companies could participate. But I think it's work in progress. At the moment, we haven't, you know, we're busy doing the evaluation for the kind of pre-qualification on the small projects. And at this point, I wouldn't say how it looks like. We need to analyze the evaluation and see what is the outcome of that. And then once we have pre-qualified people, they can go now and prepare a proper bid for submission next year, which I think it's a way of building capacity, you know, locally to make sure that everybody participates in the market. With regards to provinces that are not necessarily benefiting from this project, Honorable Hadev, I'm also from Mpumalanga, so we share the same concern. So I think we are mindful of the fact that, you know, the sun cannot be, you know, maybe let's say the sun or the wind cannot be the same throughout the country. And we are also mindful of the fact that we need to try and get projects that will give value for money. We need projects that can compete and projects that could give better, you know, revenue. Because the more you get better revenue from your project, chances are the better. If the sun rays are not good enough, it means chances are you're going to charge a higher price for you to get, you know, your revenue back. So those are the things that we're sort of trying to struggle with. That's why, in our view, Mpumalanga, KZN, those are areas which could potentially benefit more on biomass projects. And the way we see it is that Mpumalanga got a lot of sugar, sugarcane, and that could be regarded as cogeneration. We use the word cogeneration very loosely because we don't necessarily, you know, use the international definition of cogeneration. But we regard that as areas that could benefit Mpumalanga and also KZN. And I think probably early next year we would be going out with a procurement program that deals with those particular, you know, areas of biomass, you know, in those regions to try and make sure that we also create job opportunities in those areas. But what we are trying to avoid, we don't want to force a technology that does not necessarily belong to a particular area, you know, just because we want to create employment. We rather look for a technology that is appropriate for that particular region. With regards to confidentiality, I think Angelique has already mentioned this. We are very strict on the manner in which we deal with our evaluators. We provide them, for instance, computers which stays in the office. They don't take it home. They come and do the evaluation there, and when they are done, they leave everything. They go home. They don't take even a paper with them home. So when you get into the evaluation venue, we search you, we check whether you don't come in with any memory stick or any pen or anything. We provide you with everything inside the evaluation, and you do evaluation. If you want to type, you type on our computer, then you go. Okay. And also we make them sign declaration, we make them sign confidentiality undertaking to say they're not going to disclose in any way whatever they've seen. We are mindful of the fact that even though we're saying they must leave everything behind, but some of the information might remain in their mind, so they could still, you know, say something about it because they've seen it. Therefore we insist that they should sign the confidentiality undertaking, that they wouldn't disclose, you know, the information that they've seen. I think Angelique has covered the point about people living with disabilities. I'm not going to go into that. Local manufacturing, we don't necessarily make it a requirement that people should manufacture things locally, but we make it a requirement that you must purchase locally manufactured items, certain items. As a result, it sort of drives people to think about manufacturing locally so that they can get the point. As a result, at the moment, we've got a couple of, you know, places where we understand they're setting up manufacturing activities, you know, for certain components of the renewable energy sector. But I think DCI probably can speak to this one much better than I do. But I understand there are a couple of manufacturing plants that are being set up, as you speak, in South Africa to support the program. And I think one of the things that probably we should not talk about is the fact that the program makes a lot of contribution to local community. Actually, when we're calculating the socio-economic contribution, it currently, for window 1, window 2 and 3, it currently sits at about 9.5 billion rand, which goes to the community in which these, in areas where these projects are located. And I think probably that's the point that Angelique was sort of trying to drive home, that we need to work very closely with those projects, especially in areas where you've got a couple of projects close together, because it becomes a sizable amount of money to go to the community, and you need to try and facilitate the manner in which that money is used. You know, we appreciate the fact that the sellers normally they come up with the economic development plans and say this is how they want to spend the money. But at some point we need to facilitate some of the activities that are in those economic development plans, because you don't want each and every seller to build a school. Probably you want to diversify some of the activities in a manner that will benefit the community. We don't want everybody to go and build a ground, you know, playing ground. You need to sort of say, okay, now it's fine, we got enough stadiums. If you intend to build a stadium, don't build a stadium, rather build a clinic or something like that. So we are sort of trying to make sure that we facilitate that. But it's one of the things that going forward in the office, we are looking at very closely and see how best we could, you know, manage this money. And the 9.5 billion is not just the only money that's going to go to the community. Let's remember that some of the communities, they are taking a stake on the project. At some point, you will also have dividends flowing from the project to the community. So all that money needs to be managed properly. I think the point about choosing a bidder, you know, and how does that affect previously disadvantaged individuals, I think I've dealt with that one, the fact that we insist that you need to have, you know, 40% South African participation at a particular, you know, contributor status. But I think when we started the program, we appreciated the fact that you may not have, as South African, we might not have the experience that it takes to build these plants. And we may not understand fully how we should go about in doing this kind of project. As a result, we try to make sure that we blend, you know, the international partners with local people. But we don't want to take the responsibility of matching companies, but we just put the requirement that at least you must come with that particular percent, and then you go and find yourself a local partner that meets the requirement. Women at middle age, I think Angelique dealt with that. The small hydro and biogas, why nothing is happening there? I think these projects are more complex as compared to PV, if I may say so. With regards to PV, photovoltaic, you buy panels, you look for an area with good sun rays and then install the project. But when it comes to PV, when it comes to biogas, you need to find the site. You need to find either a landfill gas site which could work. And in most cases, the one that we got at this point is in Johannesburg, the landfill gas. It's located in more than one site. It's a small project. If you look at it, I think it's about how many megawatts the landfill gas? It's about 18 megawatts. But it doesn't come from one site. It covers more than one area, which means they've collected different landfill gas and put them together, and they're going to install whatever pipes to start the gas from there and move them to some other area where the power will be generated. So it's a bit complex, you know. It's not as easy as PV, for instance. That's why the uptake is a bit slow. And also the fact that the landfill site, by and large, are owned by municipalities. So whoever wants to develop those sites must first get into negotiation with the municipalities and agree on the terms, how they're going to do this project and what the municipality will benefit out of it. And, you know, by the time when they come out of those negotiations, it's a year it's gone or the second year. So it sort of, it takes more time to put it together. But we are optimistic that we were still going to get more projects. I think it's people, they need more time to put it together. And I think the small hydro as well, we had two projects under this round for small hydro. And I think both the projects couldn't make it on Part B. It's not a price issue. It was the manner in which the project is structured. That's why it couldn't qualify. I think I should specify that normally what we require is that a project should be robust and should stand the test of time. One of the things that probably, you know, people they don't get right is that we normally say a project needs to be ring-fenced. It means you can't mix it with other activities, for instance. And the reason for that is that if your other business sort of goes bankrupt, that project couldn't go bankrupt because it's a ring-fenced and independent business. So sometimes you find that people, they sort of get it wrong, you know, somewhere in the process of doing those things. And also we look at the financial model. We analyze it and have a look whether is this project making money? Oh, okay. Because if the project doesn't make money, chances are by the time when you reach financial close, the banker will say, no, look, this thing doesn't look right, so we're not going to fund it. You know. Then we are sitting with a project that cannot be funded, and then the banks come back and say, no, we're not going to fund this. And the seller starts trying to renegotiate the contract, which puts us in trouble because we don't supposed to renegotiate or we don't supposed to negotiate these things because we selected you as a preferred bidder, you know, on the basis that you're going to deliver the project or you're going to deliver the power under the current circumstances with the following conditions that we have listed. So we try and analyze it properly. Unfortunately, some when you do the analysis on the financial model, you realize that the financial model is not properly put together, you know. As a result, it might not, you know, deliver you the power as anticipated. As a result, you say, no, 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 this is a problem here. You go back and sort it out. And once you sort it out, you can come back. But I should say that everybody that didn't qualify under Part B, we give them the opportunity that they can come and talk to us about the areas where they could get right, and we can explain to them exactly what went wrong where, so that in future they can correct those mistakes. And the chair spoke about more information in terms of number of bids that were received and stuff like that. I think I apologize that I sort of focus more probably on round three. But if I can just step back and say how we do the projects. We normally say people should register well in advance on whether they intend to play in this space or not. Once they've registered, they would tell us where the project is, how many megawatts is the project, and also they must flag which window they're interested on. If they want to bid on window 3 or they want to bid on window 4 and stuff like that, they need to tell us that in advance. Okay. So under that category, we had about over 400 people registered. Okay. People telling us, okay, I want to participate and on this window or on that window. So it was all in all somewhere 400. Then people who are sort of intending to bid for window 3, they were somewhere just slightly below 200. You know, it's like, okay, I intend to bid on window 3, okay, that's fine. And then we sort of, towards, as we move closer to the bid submission date, we said to people, hey, please reconfirm whether you're still going to bid on window 3. And then on that reconfirmation, the number sort of dropped from that higher number to somewhere around 150, you know, people say, no, 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 I'm still coming, you know. Because remember, some they fall off because they couldn't get right certain things or they couldn't get right with their, you know, environmental authorization or, you know, there will be some things that sort of holding back. Yet when they were giving us the notification, they sort of anticipated that they want to be ready with that, you know. And then they start falling off. Then we got about 150 confirmation. But eventually the number of bids that we received was about 93. And I think it's important to emphasize that the reason why we want to know upfront how many bids we want to receive is for our own as well arrangement and having the necessary, you know, skills and the necessary number of people to do the evaluation and stuff like that, and the venue and all that. So it helps us to plan properly if we know how many people we want to get. And then on window 2, the number of bids submitted, I think it was about 53, something like that. You will see that from window 2 to window 3, we had almost a 50% sort of increase. So I think, before I mix the numbers up, probably I can give you a full details with all the numbers if you like. And then you had an issue about local content being 40%. I think you were talking about, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's biogas, biomass. Yeah. I think the local content, we put a threshold, which means we want everybody to at least give us a particular number. It differs from one technology to another, depending on in real time, what is it that we can do locally? Okay, we work very close with the CI in terms of quantifying, you know, the certain aspect of, you know, these technologies that could be derived locally. We don't want to put very high thresholds that we may not be in a position to meet. However, we want to be realistic in terms of the threshold that we put in place. But also, I think the competition is also a driver of how much you get on all the different elements. If you got more competition, people start to give you more so that they try and beat the other person that they're competing with. Yet in this space, biomass, for instance, we don't have competition. So you'll find that if you've got two projects, if they pass your Part B, the qualification criteria, they are eventually in the running. So I think people there are quite aware of the fact that the competition is limited in that space. As a result, you know, if they match the minimum thresholds, they will go through, you know, because they're not going to compete with anyone on price and also on economic development. But once you start competing on economic development, probably you will see that level of content, local content might start increasing. So, but not just local content. I mean, all the other elements might be higher. Implication on price. I think the price of the implication of the lower tariffs, I think these are good news for the country, because it means what will pay me and you, it's a lower tariff as well. Instead of increasing the tariff by 4%, just making an example, you would have to increase it maybe by 2.5% to cover the cost of renewable. So I think it's a good news. It means we buy more megawatt with less parts. That's what basically it means. And I think while I wouldn't say how it will look like going forward, but because I'm not sure what's happening in the market, but I'm confident that what we have received on this round is very good value for money. I think I can confidently say that. Chair, I think I've tried to cover all the questions unless I missed something.
Honourable members, Prof. still wants to make a follow-up.
That's on a lighter note, Chair. I think Angelique referred to the scarcity of black-owned vendors. What about black-owned processors?
No, Prof, we'll look into that. Thanks for noting it. We'll look into that. Everyone, thanks very much.
I'm just struck by a couple of things that come out of your responses. The localization of shareholding is probably something that we'll be keen on. Let's let the cat out of the bag. The Darling project, as you know, that the Darling community has been breathing on ONX to ensure that they have a stake in the local wind farm project there. I know Mamtito, Wabungubeni, he has been trying his best to look into that. Just as an example, but I'm taking this example and, you know, projecting into the future that I trust and hope this is something that all stakeholders, not just government or us as parliament, but all those who are listening even today, would look at that more favorably to see the extent to which that could be viewed. Because IDC, NEF, National Empowerment Fund, I'm not sure what the provincial equivalents, your ECDC, WESCRO, MEG, LIMDEF, and things like that. They look into that, but I know some of us would know IDC does go boldly in assisting local localization of shareholding, because at the end of the day, it's not just the jobs, you know, that count. It's also the extent to which the community can have a long-term benefit in any initiative. And also around, you know, the socio-economic impact, you know, at a local level as well. I'm glad that there's the thinking that let's diversify the contributions. And I'll be bold enough, honorable members, to just raise something which is also a passion to me, that of local economic development. What's wrong in some of these contributions, you know, unless they really, we need to have a clinic, you know, built. But what's wrong in looking into a local business park? What if it's an area that has a potential, maybe on agriculture, where there are emerging farmers who would like to do some beneficiation, you know, agro-processing. And then you do a small-scale business park for them, Mamutindo, particularly Western Cape area, where there could be those opportunities in a proper place. In fact, I once, when I was going home one of the days, I was with one lady who's actually around the Mecha, you know, that area. He's got a couple of people who already are doing Ilando, the extraction of from the alu, you know. And they are really having it hard. I mean, they're running, you know, working gloves and also all those things. And with the need for the alu concentrate, you can imagine the amount of money they make. You see, I'm just throwing this on the table so that this could be looked into in the future. And you can imagine that kind of long-term investment, you know. And it goes right into other benefits which may have a good ripple effect. I remember whether it will be around or so after the elections, or whether it can make it before, I don't know, because as you know, when it comes to 2014, there's a different flavor in our work and a different character as well. But I think it's an energy stakeholders meeting to look at window 1, 2, 3 and beyond. It's still the prerogative of the minister on how to mould, you know, the program for the 2,800 megawatts. But still, being a democratic government, it's good to create a platform just for people to present a couple of ideas as to how we should. Confidence has been generated up to now, as you can see. We've got 8,000 jobs. We can
can count those for the youth there, and I trust and hope some skills, albeit it could be small, should already be sneaked in there. Why not to maybe even look at expanded public works program, which can help, because for every opportunity you give a skill to a few, it has a long-term effect on the marketability of that individual. To me, on that score, let me thank the department for now. But please share with us, you know, some nice metrics, you know, on the bidders. Because already, even though we stopped halfway, but you already, you know, were showing something very interesting on Windows 3, that 1200, then 2150, then down 93. But the very fact that there was around almost double those who made applications at the end of the day, just interest, shows some interesting potential on this sector, you know. And also, not only for you, but for other stakeholders, you know, as to what is it that makes people start backtracking. That should be our duty on the members to check on that. But surely, it's good in any case on the members to be quite tight at this stage, you know, so that we are able to draw in as many lessons as is possible, such that when we roll out and probably massify a little bit, we'll be able to do that with better capability. Can you then agree that we've dispensed with this item? Let's move to ISMA. You recall that we were late. But I don't have good news on it, members. Unfortunately, I thought I would bring some news to you. But I'll propose humbly on my knees that we defer this, because I thought I would have done enough preparations on this matter with the Speaker's office, House Chairperson and all of that, but unfortunately we just couldn't conclude everything on this one. Sorry for that. And even this following item, that of adoption of minutes and reports, now on that one we don't have the quorum.
Yeah.
But let me just appeal to members to ensure that they go through all the minutes and ensure that when we do them, we have as less time as possible, because there's quite a volume of them, as well as reports. But at least as a compensation, we had a very good session today about successes of Windows 1, 2, and 3. For now, I'd like to thank everyone. Not only you, honorable members and the department, but for all those who have been silently listening. It's not over yet until it's over, but at least a good start has been done, and as I've already alluded, that, you know, that broad engagement, you know, let's still look at it quite with keenness, you know, obviously next year, and see how we take things forward. And the feedback, one of the members, I'm sure you would concur, a feedback, robust feedback, not only to the department, but to us as well, from the various stakeholders sitting out there, is very much welcome, because it can only make us better. On that, Yabonga Ngosi, by Dangi, the meeting stands adjourned.